This is the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. Are you right-handed or left-handed? Southpaws are in the minority. It's estimated that the percentage of lefties in humans is between 10 and 12%. On the program today, we're going to take a look at handedness. Our guest is journalist David Wolman. He's the author of A Left-Hand Turn Around the World, Chasing the Mystery and Meaning of All Things Southpaw. David Wolman is a southpaw, as is yours truly. I do suspect, however, his left-handedness is stronger than mine. When he set out to research and write this book, he had a couple of obvious questions in mind. What causes left-handedness? Do left-handed people differ from the majority? If so, how? But along the way, he discovered something he never anticipated. He tells readers in the preface to A Left-Hand Turn Around the World that pursuing the origins and consequences of left-handedness would lead him to larger, indeed some of the largest scientific questions of our time, such as the origin of language and the evolution of the modern mind. Listeners, I invite your questions and comments and observations for our guest, David Wolman. You can join the discussion with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Outside the local dialing area, use the toll-free number 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. David Wolman's work has appeared in numerous publications, including Discover, Newsweek, New Scientist, Outside, and the San Jose Mercury News. He was recently a Fulbright Journalism Fellow in Sapporo, Japan. Again, the phone numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. David Wolman, hello.
Hello there, Celeste.
My fellow Ketog.
I can't believe you remembered that. That's wonderful.
Translate that for our listeners.
Ketog, if I'm not mistaken, means southpaw in Gaelic, which is just one of the two Gaelic words I remember from my summer in Ireland once.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're talking to a girl of Irish ancestry, so it stuck with me.
Oh, good, good. Well, yeah. That's exciting to hear.
In Ireland, as in several other nations of the world, you know, people drive on the left.
Mm-hmm.
And Americans who have driven in these countries say it can take one a little time to adjust to that. Is it any easier if you're left-handed?
Well, I think the stick shift is certainly benefits those of us who are lefties when driving in those types of countries. But in the section of the book where I actually did some research in Scotland, just because I'm an American and am trained for left side of the road driving, I was quite confused over there and almost ran into a little trouble, despite the supposed advantage of being able to stick shift with the left hand.
Yeah. Well, what motivated you to begin this project, Your Left Hand Turn Around the World?
Well, I think for many years before I actually started the project, I had a hunch that this would be an exciting topic to pursue for a nonfiction book that was sort of travel heavy. And for as long as I can remember, being left-handed has sort of made me feel different, never drastically or dramatically so. But my siblings are righties, my parents are righties, and my aunts and uncles, it was just me with this thing, but I never was given any detailed information about this slight otherness. And, you know, then sort of fast forward into a journalism career, this interest in leftiness was still sort of there on the back burner. And then I started to think, well, you know, someone out there has got to have some credible information about this thing beyond the sort of urban legends that we're often fed. And so I thought it would be a neat idea to go and try and track them all down.
Yeah.
Or some of them.
Yeah. Well, speaking of urban legends or speaking of things that we think we know about handedness, you know, I think if we were to step outside and ask people on the sidewalk to riff on handedness and left-handedness, I suspect someone would tell you that lefties have a shorter life expectancy. And I suppose someone would say they're known for having a great number of very smart people among them. And that if you're left-handed, you're right-brained.
Right, right.
Are these things true? Where did these ideas come from?
Well, let me start with the first one, that left-handers supposedly die younger. This is based on, I think it was a 1980 study that has its origins in at a university in Vancouver, Canada. And researchers there looked at left-handed baseball players from years past and then followed them through their lives and essentially looked at how old they were when they died. But without getting mired in too much detail here, the methodology for that work was really flawed. And later studies, numerous later studies, really not just debunked but kind of eviscerated that whole study. And yet, because it had made such an initial media splash, it was almost like an instant urban legend was born with this notion that left-handers die younger. And as a journalist myself, I don't think this is anyone's fault per se. It's just sort of disappointing. As is often happens, an initial study will make a larger media splash than the later stories indicating that first one wasn't quite accurate. So this was something I decided not to include in the book, even not to include it to just debunk it, because I felt like it has been debunked a number of times, and I didn't really want to give it a lot of space just to bring it up and then shoot it down. Yet again, it didn't really feel very fresh to me.
Yeah. You got to advance the story.
Well, supposedly. So let's see, your second question. Left-handers are...
Smart group.
Smart group. Well, these two are. Obviously. No. The necessarily more creative thing, or that left-handers are quote-unquote right-brained or think in their right minds, although fun for us lefties when we're sort of bonding on the street or when I see a waiter or a waitress with a pen in the left hand, I immediately will say something and I'll get a cute aside, like, lefties, we're just better, or we're right-minded, or something like that. And it's fun, but, it's not true in the sense that, left-handed people, right-handed people, mixed-handed people, whatever, they all think with their entire brain. And it's quite wrong to say that left-handers think with the right side of their brain and vice versa for righties. And there's a significant section in the book dedicated to the discussion of this idea and where its roots are, and I'm actually calling you from Southern California, and this is where the studies at Caltech were first conducted in the 60s and 70s, looking at split brain patients. And again, to sort of skim over the details, these patients were enormously informative for the field of neurology, but while shedding light on different responsibilities of different areas of the brain, the notions of different geographies in the brain sort of got away from everyone, and we in the media sort of jumped on it and said, oh, well, if the right hemisphere of the brain is responsible for spatial perception, for example, and we know that the right side of the brain controls the left side of the body, oh, well, then, lefties are somehow hotwired to this quote-unquote artistic part of the brain, and that is, that is quite faulty, because when we talk about this cross-wiring, you're going to stop me if I'm talking too fast, Celeste, right?
Yeah, no, you're fine. Go ahead.
So if we're talking about this cross-wiring nature of the body, it's completely irrespective of handedness. Right-handers out there have left arms and left feet, and they need to move, and those movements are controlled by a little corner of the right hemisphere that's sending signals to the opposite side of the body, and vice versa for the other side of the body, and vice versa yet again for left-handers. And again, all of that is sort of irrespective of handedness. So it gets to be quite... far more detailed than that. And, although as a proud lefty, it's a little bit sad to say, but yet scientifically honest, I guess, to say, because I pick up a pen with my left hand, that does not make me more creative. Unless, of course, I just am. But maybe for different reasons, I guess.
Yeah. Well, to get to, supposedly we have an advantage in some sports, and maybe we can talk a little bit about where we got the term southpaw.
Well, the best sources indicate that it was the old Comiskey Park in Chicago, and a sports writer there was describing left-handed pitchers and the arc of their arm and the ball being delivered to the batter at home plate was coming from the south-facing side of the stadium. I did want to run across one source that suggested that the term originated in boxing first, but I think... with further scholarship on the topic, if there ever could be such a thing, I think they would determine that it was indeed baseball originally. And now, of course, it's baseball and boxing and tennis and fencing and pretty much anything to describe a left-hander.
Yeah. Well, there's some thinking that this can be an advantage in these sports. How come?
Well, in baseball, for example, batting from the left side of the plate puts you a step closer to first base. And then with some pictures, it also grants you a fraction of a second to see the ball a little bit more than if you were batting from the opposite side of the plate. In other sports, I love tennis, and I pick up on and notice all of the famous lefty tennis players right away, so you get this hunch that, oh, maybe lefties are more highly represented in games like tennis than compared to their average distribution in the population, which is like 10 to 12% or so. But the McEnroe and Ivanisevic and Martina Navratilovas of the world are not necessarily gifted tennis players because they're left-handed. Left-handedness helps in that it's simply unfamiliar to an opponent, because in your life of playing tennis, whether it's 1 week of tennis or 50 years of tennis or fencing or boxing, 90% of your opponents, on average, will be right-handers. And so to face off against a left-hander with that unfamiliar stance, or the forehand and backhand coming from unfamiliar sides, that gives the left-hander a slight advantage in the game. But it isn't, again, just because they're lefties, they're more gifted at this game.
Yeah. Well, it certainly hasn't helped me on the diamond or on the tennis court. I suppose I can take some comfort in that if I was right-handed, I'd be even worse.
or at least less surprising.
Less surprising. There you go. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest today is journalist David Woolman, author of A Left-Hand Turn Around the World, Chasing the Mystery and Meaning of All Things Southpaw. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with questions, comments, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Let's talk with a listener, a caller in Champaign, on line one. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
I, myself, am ambidextrous and fairly well-balanced, though I guess because I right, predominantly with my right hand. I've got a little bit more fine motor skill on my right. But I read with great interest when they first came out with the studies about right brain, left brain, because I didn't know what that meant about me. And I was under the impression that I don't even remember which is which at this point, but one side of your brain is supposed to be more analytical and one side is supposed to be more linguistic, and that I thought that those sides were reversed in left-handed people. Now, am I wrong about that?
Well, in fact, you're wrong in part. And, again, this stems back to the studies with the split-brain patients. But you'll find that I think the number is 98 or 99% of all right-handed people have the speech center of the brain headquartered in the left hemisphere. And for left-handers, for many years, when this was first discovered, everyone just assumed, well, left-handers are this minority, and maybe they'll just have a mirror set up in the brain.
Yeah.
And it would be 98 to 99% of lefties having speech headquartered in the right hemisphere of the brain. And in fact, that's not the case. It looks to be that about 70% of left-handers also have speech headquartered in the left hemisphere of the brain. So it's different enough to be titillating and enchanting to researchers, and yet not the mirror opposite by any stretch. On the contrary, as an aggregate, most left-handers are going to have brain organization just like right-handers. And yet they are, again, as an aggregate, they are more likely to have more symmetry in the brain than less symmetry. But, the sort of gross characterizations of the responsibilities of each hemisphere, it puts us on thin ice to have those kind of discussions, just because the brain is such an astoundingly complicated organ,
and
that
one side will take over.
To do analytical thinking, you do have to have back and forth communication between both sides of the brain, and same for spatial perception, and same for a zillion different tasks. And I think one of the problems with the media reports following on this split brain patients' research was that we didn't really get a good sense of how impaired these individuals really were. And again, that's because science was so excited to be learning about the different responsibilities of different parts of the brain in each half, which is astounding. It's incredible how different the two halves of the brain are. And yet, we sort of paved over or hurried past the fact that, these individuals who had that connector between the two hemispheres cut, they were really impaired. And to, in fact, be creative or do analytical thinking or have emotions, you know, 99 out of 100 times you really need access and operations happening in both hemispheres.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Let's talk with another listener calling us this afternoon on a cell phone on our toll-free line. Line 4, good afternoon.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me okay?
Sure can.
Yeah, okay. I'm calling from a car phone, so I got a brief observation story, and then I'll hang up for your comments. I'm 50 years old, grew up on the south side of Chicago in a Catholic school. My sister, my older sister, is 10 years older than me, and she has recounted several times these stories where the nuns would actually, she's left-handed, they would actually tie her left hand behind her and force her to write with her right hand, because at some point, I don't know why, but the thinking was it was some sort of a defect that she was left-handed and everyone's right-handed and you have to be right-handed. And consequently, she learned to write with both hands, but that never occurred to anybody, to me or anybody in my class. I don't know if that's something we all kind of grew out of, but I didn't know whether or not your guest had any knowledge of that or any history of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go ahead and hang up and listen.
Okay. Good question.
Well, thank you. I hope you're driving with your strong hand and holding the phone with your quote-unquote non-dominant hand. But in reporting this book, it would be hard for, I would say, 2 whole days to go by without people sharing with me various stories about having their handedness or a sibling's handedness sort of switched, or at least strong cultural influence from the wise adults around them, telling them that the left was bad, they need to get their act together ASAP and put the pen or put the fork in the right hand. And a lot of this stems from the Bible. God is frequently doing nice, benevolent things with the right hand and nothing or not so nice things with the left hand. But it even has, there's a section of the book where I talk about some anthropology research looking at ancient civilizations and their perceptions of the right even as positive and the left as negative. So that's where a lot of this stuff stems from. And in sort of a tongue-in-cheek way, I've been saying during my book tour recently, when other people bring this up, is that in my year-plus of research about this topic, I have found that, in fact, those Catholic school teachers were incorrect, and that left-handedness is not, surprise, surprise, the mark of the beast. And the devil, I don't think, has had any particular communications with your sister or other left-handers like me. So that's the good news. We are just fine.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I had a teacher when I was learning to write who, you know, took the chalk, the pencil, out of my left hand and put it in the right. But she gave up pretty quickly.
So you couldn't take to it, huh?
No. And I just turned my paper and went on.
Good for you. No. Well, you know, and I think in the past, I'm sure it depends on geography, but the past 25, 35 plus years in most Western countries, this is sort of an outdated attitude now, but certainly in many parts of the world, especially poorer countries where one hand is very carefully designated for eating and the other for
mm-hmm.
hygiene purposes, the left-handedness is still very much looked down upon, and then some, really. There was an Eritrean cab driver who was taking me to the airport on one of these reporting excursions, and when I was discussing the book with him a little, he said, If my wife were to write or to eat with the left hand, I would divorce her on the spot, which was a little severe for my take. But it's still really out there, and this is addressed in the book. You know, I wanted to delve into the science as well, but these cultural components and cultural influences you really can't ignore.
Yeah, in cultures where the left hand is seen as is unclean and or sinister, are children allowed to be left handed?
I don't think they are. Now, they may be left-handed in the neurological sense,
mm-hmm.
in that most science now agrees that handedness to a degree is something you are born with. Having said that, culture obviously plays a tremendous role in this. If your handedness is switched for writing, for eating, for throwing, etc. And so in that sense, these people, maybe they are kind of closet left-handers, and Japan is a country I spent some time in, and although now in the classrooms there too, maybe the past 10 or 15 years, they're loosening up to this a little bit as well. But for a long time, you have to write Chinese characters, for example, from left to right and up and top to down, the stroke order. So it really looks clumsy, they say, to write with the left hand. So people would have to write and eat, et cetera, with the left hand over there, but then get them on the baseball diamond or get them brushing their teeth all alone in the bathroom with no one monitoring them. And I think that sort of natural inclination for use of the left hand emerges.
Yeah. Has left-handedness been celebrated in some places?
Not many places. I'm still looking around for some, so if some of your callers know of interesting places around the world, and assuming I could find a plane ticket to get there or get some grant money to get me there, I would be interested to hear about it. There's a little town in Australia where I got an email from someone who said, you know, you have to come to our town. We are lefty central of the universe. But they might just be sort of looking for something to bring up a sluggish economy in this little town. And I did meet a Satanist in Portland, Oregon. This is where I live currently. And he explained to me that in Church of Satan rituals, they will raise the left hand or use the left hand intentionally. But the sort of asterisk is not because they are worshiping the left hand or exalting the left hand per se. They just more want to do their best to contradict anything that has to do with mainstream religion. And in mainstream religion, everything seems to be about, again, the right is good, the left is bad. And so you cross yourself with the left hand, or Jews will wrap their left arm in the tefillin strap, it's called. And as one rabbi told me, it's as if you're bridling your dangerous side before going to God and saying, now I'm ready to pray. Mm. So aside from Church of Satan members, or at least the one I met, I'm having some trouble finding places other than the pages of my book, of course, where leftiness is celebrated.
Yeah, I've got a couple of listeners waiting to talk with us. Before I go to the next caller, though, I did want to know, how did Left Hand West Virginia get its name?
Well, it looks like it was just the left-hand fork of, I think it might be called the Sandy River, although I might be mistaken. But there is a river there, and in my wanderings through the town and interactions with just a few people there, it's quite a desolate place. They all seem to say, I think it has to do with the Sandy River, the left fork of the Sandy, and that's about it. But the name was important enough for me that I felt like I had to go there and see if I could seek inspiration somehow.
Yeah. Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Champaign on line one. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I wonder if part of the explanation for the vilification of the left hand comes out of tool usage. I grew up in a blue-collar family that it was just awkward learning things from my family. And, you know, I've had a couple of accidents as a left-handed person. I know other people who have. So I wonder how much of that is a result of coming out of agriculture or blue-collar sort of situations where you're working with your hands, and it proves awkward if most people are learning and shaping tools for the right hand.
Right, right.
Just that comment. And thank you.
Okay, thanks for the comment.
I think that the sort of overall vilification of the left hand probably stems from further back than the Industrial Revolution or sort of the advent of tools that did or didn't have a righty slant to them. But I think you're absolutely right that tool use and machinery really does have an influence on the handedness question. And earlier we were talking about this Canadian scientist who came up with the data suggesting that left-handers die younger. And that, although that proved to be incorrect, one of the important topics he shed some light on was the sort of right bias of heavy machinery and hazards to left-handers. And although my book, I say this thing, I'm not out to suggest that it's time for a lefties march on Washington per se. I do think that this stuff is overlooked. And there's both the awkwardness of lefties having to deal with, you know, even smaller things, the scissors and the ruler and the corkscrew and the coffee pot with the numbers printed backwards for left-handed users, let alone sort of heavy machinery that might be more dangerous. I think these things matter. They matter in the sense that it's a subtle influence on lefty brains to have to do this microscopic recalibration many times a day without even necessarily thinking about it, but it's something lefty brains have to do that that righty brains never have to do. And although, you know, the verdict is very much still out as far as how that influences who we are and how we think, maybe not very much at all, and yet it's definitely undeniable that this is something that we as people, and that more specifically our brains, have to contend with. Yeah. So I think the machinery issue is actually really important and deserves some more research.
Yeah. Well, on the lighter side of this, you know, I pitch right-handed, and I suspect that's because growing up there was never a glove for lefties at school or in the neighborhood or anywhere.
Right.
And so it was just natural. Well, then you put that glove on, and you throw right-handed.
And you adapt. And yep. Again, I think there's this adaptability component to growing up left-handed that again, isn't a severe influence, but that subtle influence over time. Personally, I think it does matter, or perhaps the other way to say it is how could it not matter somehow?
Yeah. Let's talk with another caller, a listener in Levington on line two. Hi. Hi, Levington.
Oh, hi. My question, I guess, was about the strength of the dominance. I mean, this, like the host just said, you know, she learned how to pitch right-handed, and even though she's left-handed, and I assume she's a fair pitcher, she wouldn't pitch often. And I just kind of wonder about the strength of the dominance, because I do some things I notice that it seems like the dominance is actually do things a little better left-handed, you know, and I know some people that almost seem like they can't do anything with their left hand or, you know, right hand or whichever other way they're dominant, if you catch my drift.
Well, I'm quite happy to hear that someone has raised this question of strength of handedness, because a lot of research now looks at handedness. If you imagine a bell curve, we have this this continuum of handedness, really, and there are strongly right-handed people. So if you give them a survey of 10 different activities, writing and throwing and brushing teeth and eating noodles, 10 out of 10 of those activities they prefer and are better at using the right hand. And then in the middle of this continuum, you have this population of mixed-handed people scoring 9 to 1 or 8 to 2 or 4 to 6, on this survey. And that's where we get this notion of mixed-handedness, which is really sort of one of the forefront areas of laterality research these days, and sort of how do mixed-handed people differ in the cognitive psychology sense from people who are strong-handed, and actually strong-handed regardless of direction, to the right or to the left. And the other thing I was going to mention, Celeste, about your throwing of the right hand, mm-hmm. is that it looks like something, I think the best numbers indicate that about 30% of self-identifying left-handers are in fact mixed-handed once you get them in the laboratory or hand them one of these slightly more thorough surveys. They in fact aren't strongly left-handed, and maybe only 2 to 3% of the human population is strongly left-handed, and so we seem to have more of these mixed tendencies. But again, it's hard to tease apart what is natural, what were you born with, or what was, you know, there are no more lefty-friendly baseball mitts, so you as a youngster had to adapt and adapt quickly.
Oh, very interesting. Is the caller still there? You want to follow up?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Okay, well, thanks for the call. Let's talk with another listener, caller in Champaign. Line one, you're on the air with David Wolman.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm a musician, and I know a lot of really terrific musicians that are left-handed. But I think most of us are right-handed. I'm right-handed, but I find myself doing other things that aren't, you know, not on the instrument. I find myself doing things with my left hand. I'm surprised sometimes to notice that I'm doing some things with my left hand. And basically, I'm right-handed.
Interesting.
Do you have any comments at all about musicians, you know, like pianists? They have to use both hands equally well, and the same with a woodwind instrument player. And
right.
Trumpet is different. You know, you hold it... You play the trumpet with your right hand, but French horn players, I think they do it with the left.
It's true. I'm quite interested in the question of musicians, and people who have been attending my book readings seem to have equal interest. They have brought it up, I think, 5 out of 5 nights now on the beginnings of my tour here. But I wanted to mention a researcher who I write about in the book. His name is Stephen Christman, and he's based not too far from where all of you are in Toledo, Ohio. And he is doing work on this question of mixed versus strong-handedness. And the best quick summary of his research has to do with this idea that if you are strong-handed, maybe you have heightened shielding between what's going on in the left hemisphere and what's going on in the right hemisphere. And so then maybe your two hands could do independent things, maybe driving and talking on the cell phone at the same time, or maybe playing two independent lines of music simultaneously. On the other hand, no pun intended, or sort of intended, if you are more mixed-handed, perhaps, and I underline perhaps because his theory is quite new, maybe you have heightened interhemispheric communication, that is, this bundle of fibers connecting the left and right side of the brain is really hyperactive and sharing a lot of information. And in that case, would that benefit you or make you sort of better suited to play, for example, a string instrument where you need really intricate communication between the two hands, i.e. the two hemispheres of the brain? You welcome that back and forth, or you welcome that lack of shielding, if you will. And so Christman's work really touches on this music issue in a beautiful way. And in fact, he is an amateur musician, I believe, and his work really started, or his breakthrough for this idea, was a study that he conducted about 10 years ago looking at musicians and their proclivity to play different instruments.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Well, thank you for your comment.
Oh, well, thanks so much for the call.
Thanks for the call. Other questions, comments are invited. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL and 333-WILL. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. Journalist David Woolman, our guest this afternoon. He's the author of A Left-Hand Turn Around the World, Chasing the Mystery and Meaning of All Things Southpaw. Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. I was just wanting to know if you have read anything by the anthropologist Nick Toth. He's a professor at Indiana University, and he's done a lot of work studying stone tool making and prehistoric people. And I believe, if I'm not wrong, that in some of his studies, he has come to the conclusion that right-handedness has been predominant throughout, you know, the lineage of people.
Right. The name is not familiar to me, but the work is, particularly because in looking at the question of how far back the handedness and our present-day distribution of about 90% righties, 10% lefties, how far back does that really go? I know that, the stone tools and the sort of the angle of the cut or the flakes, I guess you would say, of stone being hit against stone, and then also things like looking at rock art, the representation of left-handers in rock art images compared to right-handers. That's where they can, you know, to the best of their ability, at least piece together this idea that the distribution we see now, this 9-to-1 ratio, has been constant or relatively constant through time.
Right. I just think that it's just kind of an interesting little...
Right, but it's funny you say so because, as you put it, you know, right-handedness has been dominant for eons or throughout human history. And those of us who are southpaws, we would say, you know, there have been, you know, we have been at least 10% for as long as humans have been around. But I guess
right.
It's sort of neither here nor there.
So it's clearly not selected against. It's just not.
No,
and it's not selectively favored.
And this is a really important question that you raise because in developing a model for the origins of handedness and the genetics of handedness, if indeed it is a genetic trait as they think it is, although they haven't located a gene responsible for it, you immediately bump into this question of, well, why are lefties still here? Why haven't they been bred out of the population? And
right.
Although there are, you know, the way evolution operates, there are traits that seem to be benign, that linger in certain species, that sort of do them no harm, at least for now, and so they don't necessarily get bred out. But, you know, a human being that smells like a saber-toothed tiger is probably going to get bred out of the population pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so left-handers, this is without sort of waving the flag that lefties are necessarily better or something like that, you do have to wonder, how does the species benefit from having left-handers around, or are we at an advantage, quote-unquote, or is the species at an advantage for having us within the population? And although the influences might not really matter in a technological society now, maybe the answer to that is yes, even just in a very subtle way, in that diversity is inherently a good thing for a species' survival. And so whatever little evolutionary jog that in the brain that makes some people left-handed might be part of this overall picture of, slight tweaking to the brain here and there in all sorts of ways. And left-handedness is just one way, and that overall and over time does benefit the human species.
Right. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for the call. Next we go to a listener in Urbana on line two. Hi.
Hi. I just... I think you partially answered my question with your last answer. Is there an inherited tendency, do you think, toward left-handedness in families?
There is, absolutely. The way I put it in the book is that handedness seems to run in families, but it doesn't run in a straight line.
Right, right.
And the idea being that whereas a trait like sickle cell anemia, for example, breeds true, and you can draw this little four-square box that many of us learned about in biology class in the ninth grade or so with dominant and recessive. The handedness puzzle is quite trickier than that, and what they do is they take handedness in families, and then they try and make a model and see if they can make them meet. And it does run in families, but by the best available estimates, I'm not going to get these numbers exactly right, but it'll give you a sense of what I'm talking about, and that is that two right-handed people have roughly an 11 or 12% chance of having a left-handed child, and a right and left-handed couple have a 19% chance of having a left-handed child, let's say. Again, I'm not getting the numbers exactly right. I'd have to open the book. And then two lefty people, I think I call them sort of a dream team of sinistral procreation, they would have a 27% chance of having a lefty child, so still not even half. But there is a correlation, and the models do work to a degree right now, suggesting that handedness is inherited, but it just isn't. It doesn't breed true.
Yeah, I think I can vouch for that. My aunt was extremely left-handed, and I married a man who is right-handed, as I am. My two youngest children are left-handed. The fourth one is sort of ambidextrous, but my fifth one, my son, is like my aunt. He can do nothing with his right hand.
Well, congratulations on such a lefty built crop.
Oh, I think he's great.
Well, thanks so much for the call.
I can tease him about it. So, okay, thanks.
Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign on line three. Good afternoon.
Hi, how are you? I'm a product of two left-handed parents who bred seven children, none of whom were left-handed, but I have four children, two of whom are left-handed, so that's my comment on the evolution. My question is if people in Europe are more tended towards being left-handed because since they drive on the right, they have to use their left hand a lot more to manually shift, and I just thought about that as I was driving back from Springfield today. I'll hang up and listen. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Well, it's interesting, and again, this looks to be the quite difficult question of teasing apart what is something that we are born with and that is in our genes or in our DNA, and what are cultural influences. And I bet that I don't really doubt that having to drive on the the right side of the road. I'm getting confused now. No, the left side of the road. Without question. Influences people's handedness and their behavior in everyday life. Having said that, the bulk of laterality research seems to suggest that if you can remove cultural influences, this 10 to 12% of the population being left-handed seems to cross cultures and cross boundaries and is it really across the world, and that would sort of mesh well with the genetic models, although again, it's not so easy to remove culture. It sure is easy to say so over the telephone, but how do you remove culture when talking about someone's handedness? I'm not sure.
No. Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Champaign, line four. Hi.
Hi there. I'm calling back. I hope that's all right. I was listening about the
the anthropological evidence and so forth, and I was under the impression that handedness, you know, has been discovered even down to certainly the chimpanzees, but down to the single-cell organisms, that they will prefer a left turn versus a right turn in a certain proportion depending on what the species is. And so I thought that, you know, just the survivability or the fitness for survival of the fittest of humans being left-handed, I think it goes a lot further back than that. And
right.
Also I wanted to comment that I think people are pretty well set as right or left-handed or mixed whatever before they get their driver's license.
Thank you.
Good point.
Well, I'm glad you brought up sort of non-human animals,
uh-huh.
because this plays an important part in the book, and indeed asymmetry in physiology and in behavior is crucial in nature, from lobsters having, you know, one much larger, stronger claw. That's the sort of morphology side of things. But then also, I think amino acids are left-handed or turned to the left or something like that, and DNA is left spiraling. And so there are all sorts of beautiful little asymmetries in nature that we don't think about. And there is also handedness in most mammals, if not all, I'm not actually sure, but cats and rats and elephants, and there are countless studies of hand, paw, claw, foot, hoofedness, et cetera, in the animal kingdom. And one of the chapters of the book, which is called Pitching Chimps, I went to Atlanta to visit a primate research facility there because they are studying the handedness of chimpanzees, again trying to delve into this question of the origins of handedness. And it looks like this population of chimps in Atlanta, at least, are predominantly right-handed. And what does that mean about this asymmetrical behavior of ours? Did it happen before the modern human brain was born?
Mm. Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Urbana, line one. Hi.
Hi. Just a quick question, and I'll hang up. I have heard for many years that when a person's left hand is bound in order to force right-handedness, that can lead to psychopathologies. Is that an urban legend, or is that true? I'll hang up and listen.
Right. Well, thanks for the question. As far as I can tell, and, you know, again, I'm a journalist, so I spent a couple of years on this. I haven't spent 30 years in academia studying it, but most laterality-related research, especially aimed at the handedness question, seems to be, even if not outrightly saying so, about trying to find some deficits associated with left-handers. And the overwhelming majority of this science is really doomed to flop, or has been doomed to flop. And, you know, I guess you could take that with a grain of salt because I am a strong left-hander, but you can ask the right-handed scholars on this topic as well, and they will tell you that, you know, this quest to find things that are necessarily wrong with lefties really just hasn't panned out. And so it doesn't look like those individuals necessarily, because the left hand was bound and they were made to write with the right hand, it doesn't look like that has some, you can't really draw a straight line saying, well, that's why they developed a pathology or neuroses or something like that. Having said that, you know, this would have to be a case-by-case scenario, and I'm sure that experience does influence individuals. But maybe the problem you run into is that for one left-handed individual, that was a really traumatic and difficult and problematic experience as a child, and that led to later problems. But maybe the next left-handed child in that classroom built off of this is really a character-building experience, and they adapted, and you know, they were better for it in the end because it didn't, quote-unquote, break them or something like that.
Hmm. We're out of time.
Just like that.
And I snap my finger with my left hand. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon has been David Woolman. David, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. It's a great read. It's a lot of fun. It's very smart. And there's so much more we haven't talked about, including language and the guy you call the coolest southpaw you ever met, who's just, if I left the parking lot and made a left turn and went about 45 minutes in that direction, I might run into John Evans. So I would encourage folks to meet John Evans in Decatur through this book. David, thank you so much again for joining me this afternoon and talking with our listeners.
Celeste, and your listeners, thank you so much for your interest.
David Wolman has been our guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. He's the author of A Left Hand Turn Around the World, Chasing the Mystery and Meaning of All Things Southpaw.